Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
Is everyone awake and ready?
Awake and ready.
Great. Will you please pray with me, O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest Mother.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Such a great feeling of bliss that we come together today, feeling that we're floating upon a sea of bliss that is endless, has expansion beyond all materiality, all thought, is everlasting. This is our kingdom of heaven that's been promised to us. Reading from the Cross and Lotus Journal, article by Sri Anandamoyi Ma, you get the fruit when the time is ripe. You say your mind will not concentrate on the name. What do you gain by feeling upset when your mind wanders here and there? Rather reflect, the mind does not obey me? Very well, I shall not obey the mind either. That wonderful. I shall continue to repeat the Lord's name. Have you never watched children flying kites? How very high the kites rise up freely, yet they are limited by the length of the string to which they are tied. The kite can be compared to the mind and the sense objects to the air. Keep the mind tied by the string of God's name. Some day or other, it will become still. By whatever name you may invoke him, your effort will be crowned with success. The main thing is to cling to the name with constancy. In order to be liberated, have recourse to the name. While working with your hands, his name should be repeated mentally. To repeat his name is to be in his presence. To repeat his name is to be in his presence. There are various kinds of rosaries, so practice with the help of beads is certainly necessary. But when japa becomes spontaneous, there is no need to count. However, as long as one performs one japas by effort, one will have to keep count of it. There is all the difference between doing japa and japa occurring by itself, japa meaning repeating the name of God. The mind must reach a condition where it cannot remain without the remembrance of God. The name and the named are identical. When one repeats the name, one becomes aware of all the names are his name, and later he is without name and form. Those who know who is their Ishta, that is their form of God, may, while doing japa, contemplate him from feet to the crown of his head. If one wants to engage in japa for a prolonged time, then one should concentrate on the word, the sabda, while repeating it. God is present both in the syllable and in the sound. The syllable or series of syllables by which the mind becomes liberated is called mantra. Feel convinced he would be found in the name. Have firm faith that the seed buried in your consciousness will, without fail, grow into a tree. Feel convinced he would be found in the name. Have firm faith that the seed buried in your consciousness will, without fail, grow into a tree. Just as after sowing a seed, it has to be watered and manured, so a mantra will be made to sprout when provided with the necessary nourishment in the form of satsanga, company of the saints. When the time is ripe, God will return the fruit to the aspirant if he practices the japa and dedicates its fruit to God. When the sadhaka begins to notice his passions and desires grow weaker, he should understand that God is bestowing on him the fruit of his practice. This is such a wonderful way of approaching God. You think about all the various paths and disciplines, and being able to sing your way to God is really quite a wonderful thing. When you think of the name, and whatever name you take with great faith. The wonderful thing about what Mother gave us through Papa, which is the name of Sri Ram, is that it's been a chant that has been said over and over again for thousands and thousands of years. Master used to say that when he wrote one of his songs to God, that he would spiritualize it. Now, how he spiritualized it is he would sing it until he went into a state of samadhi. And then he knew that anybody who sang with the same devotion, with the same intensity that he did, he would have paved a path for them. It spiritualizes it. It spiritualizes the words. There's a power that goes out. There's a clarity of mind that gets issued from the one who has approached God in such a way. And when you have had thousands of years of realized beings who have chanted their way to God using that name of God, you can imagine the spiritual power that goes along with that word. The first time that I met Mother was on a Wednesday night, and at the end of her talk, we all chanted Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. I had never heard it before. And the tune that Mother used, I found to be haunting. It almost disturbed me in the beginning. But I also couldn't forget it. And so I started chanting that name, and soon afterwards I took a job where I was driving long-distance truck, and it was ideal, really, in many respects, for chanting. Because a great deal of the mind wasn't required for the driving. Of course, a certain amount of attention needed to be there for the driving. But for long straights of the road, chanting could be there, and so I didn't have a strong voice. So I would chant for a little bit, a few times on the outward, and then the chant would go inside. And later I read where Papa said that was the right thing to do. You chant on the outside until it begins to go inside. And when you chant, you listen to the vibration of the chant that your own voice makes. You feel that vibration deep inside of you. And that vibration begins to turn into a feeling of bliss, of upliftment. And as you chant, whether it's mentally or orally, you're feeling that vibration, you're tuning into it. Papa also talked about that as he chanted, he would also think of the attributes of God. So he would say, God, you are all-powerful. You are all loving like a divine mother who loves her children. You look after all of our needs. You are everywhere present in the hearts of everyone. And so on. And so he would think about all the attributes of God even while he was chanting and chanting and thinking about the attributes of God. And he would rise up into such a state of ecstasy, such a state of bliss that he would forget his body. He would think only of the chant. He would think only of the bliss that he was feeling. His own daughter, who was very young at the time when Papa was still at home, and he would have his puja room, and he would be in his room, and he would be chanting all through the night. And very touchingly, very endearingly, the daughter talked about later on, as an adult, she was living at the ashram, but that she would put her hand on the door to the room where Papa was chanting, because she loved her father so much, and he her. And she would listen to him chant, and she would just put her hand there on the door, and many nights she would go to sleep right there at the door into the room where he was chanting. And so Papa would feel that such joy, such bliss welling up, and he wouldn't even want to eat. He wouldn't want to sleep. It took him over. And then it was only then, when he was completely taken over, that he had this prompting, that he thought that the right thing for him to do was to go out into the world chanting this name, taking no money with him, taking nothing extra. And so he consulted the three holy books that he would carry with him. He looked at the Gita and the Holy Bible and the story of the Buddha. And each one that he opened up at random when he was contemplating leaving the home, all talked about leaving the home for the sake of realization, for finding God. And he felt this was confirmation for what he was to do. And so he didn't belong to any organization. Traditionally, a Swami is initiated by another Swami in order to come into the order. But Papa was of such a mind that he felt that God was prompting him to enter into this order. And so he bought some new cloth. He dyed it in the guru, the orange color. And he went down by the river and he took off his old clothing and he put on the new clothing after taking a bath. And this, he felt, was God initiating him into the Swami order, and he went by the name of Swami Ramdas after that. And other people would say that's not a proper name. Usually a Swami has Ananda at the name. But Papa took Ramdas. Ram, it's the name of God. Das means the servant or the slave. And he felt that now he was going to be completely in the service. He was the slave of God. In other words, whatever he felt through this inner prompting, you see, as you rise up in this state of bliss and this full presence of God, you feel that there are directions. There are promptings that come to you that are clearly not of your own making. There are three places where promptings come into the mind. One is from the conscious mind, things that are just a habit that you're able to do when you go out and you start up the car. Fortunately, we don't have to relearn how to drive a car every single time we get into the car. There's a part of the mind that just knows. It's part of the memory muscle, or the muscle memory that we have. We've just indoctrinated into the body, into the mind, and we know it. So promptings can come from there. It's just habit. And then there are those things that are part of the deeper subconscious mind. And those are the things that oftentimes are conflicts that are within our own psyche. They are desire natures. They are things that rise up from the subconscious mind, sometimes connected with his own lifetime, sometimes connected with past lifetimes. And when we're on the path, as Papa was on the path, he didn't want to look to the left nor to the right, above or below. He looked straight to the goal, and he wanted to get nowhere else but to the goal. And when you make such a determination, everything from your past comes parading into your consciousness, unbidden by yourself. You're thinking only of God, but there are various desire natures, there are past associations. Everything comes into the mind. And you have to decide, am I going to go with this deep subconscious prompting, or am I going to remain fixated upon the goal? And that determines how straight we go to the goal. Now, we are born as creatures of free will. And we can remain in that state of free will. It was an amazing thing when the first time I heard Mother say that even in her fully realized state, she had full free will. And it made total sense after she said it. But somehow, you know, and this is a human tendency, that the ego projects onto God what the ego itself does. So if the ego restricts your freedom, it projects onto God realization and says, well, when I have God realization, I'm not free to do the things I want to do. But Mother said the difference now is that she just knew deep inside of herself that she wanted to do nothing other than God's will, because she saw that it always worked out for the highest good of everybody concerned. And this was her true intention. It's what she wanted more than anything else. So she learned through experience to surrender totally and completely to God. Now, as Papa did this, and he set out on his journey, he took no money with him, he took no food with him, he just merely took the name of God, and he chanted it continuously. And no matter what condition his body seemed to be in, he was in a state of bliss. He could have thorns in his feet, he could be emaciated, God would put him on different fasts, and all of this was to attune his body, his mind, and his soul to the divine vibration. Now, Papa said, as well as Mother said, that the things that they went through, we would not have to go through, because they were going through these experiences, not only for themselves, but for the world at large. And therefore, their experiences took them to a greater intensity. But the pattern is the same, you see. You have to come to that same place of complete and total surrender. I know this in my own life, that as I have gone down through the various layers, going deeper and deeper into God consciousness, each time I go into a deeper stage requires a greater surrender. Now, this is something that challenges us to the very core of our being. It challenges our notion of who we are and what we are. It challenges our notions, all those things that we hang on to, as if we are those very things, identity with this world. I remember when God had me give up home and so much of the life that I had known before, profession, everything, had to be thrown into the sea. And it's an interesting thing, because when the home went away, I realized how much attachment. I didn't realize it until it was gone. And I realized having home, having family, having a particular job to do is so much of what people talk about. When you ask them, oh, what are you doing? They tell you about their work. They tell you about these various things that are going on. Take them away. It's like we triangulate in these different things into our life that help to identify who and what we are. And of course, the truth is, and in a way we know the truth, that we're none of those things. And eventually, all of those things will be taken away from us one way or another, through death or through disease or through old age. We will have to let go of all of those things. But we hang on to them. We're attached to them. Because we don't know who we are unless we have those things. And so whatever is required for your realization, for your completeness, in going into this path of realization, is what is presented to you. Now, some people, and it's few these days, have to leave hearth and home, but that's not the norm. And what Lari Mahasya came to do was to show us that you could work in an office, have a family, have children, wife, home, everything, and still attain the highest levels of realization. Still take the time to meditate deeply and to realize that wonderful, tremendous state of consciousness that will come to you if you will just make the effort. Now, through so many years, Mother didn't feel, and she literally did not have time to go into greater depths in many of these yogic methods. What she had, and she had it in spades, was total devotion and thought of her guru. And she felt that Master could track her at all times, and she had this inner connection, this inner communion. And because she had three children and a husband who was disabled and wasn't able to work, she had to work all through the day, and when she got home, she had to prepare the meals, then she had to do the wash, and by midnight oftentimes or later, she dropped into bed totally exhausted and woke up early the next morning to get the children all ready and off to school and everybody fed and back to work again. And this was her life. And she felt bad about this for a long time because Master was a Raja Yogi. A Raja Yogi, that is one who approaches God through deepened meditation. Deepened meditation. But Mother primarily was a Karma Yogi, that is, yoga in action. Yoga meaning union or oneness with God, in activity. Through service to this world and to all humanity, to your family. And she is also a bhakti, that is love and devotion, and primarily her ishta, her image of God, was Yogananda. And she just thought everything. She felt that he was so tremendous in God that he was Christ come again. Maybe he was Christ come in that form again. And so she is absolutely glued to him. And that is what drew her more and more to God. And finally, the day came when she was relieved of so much of the responsibilities that she had had earlier in life. And then she was eventually went to Anandashram where she was full-time able to go deeper and deeper into the Spirit. And even before that, God was taking her more deeply. She told a funny story where she and her husband had made this trip all around the country. Her husband was doing some business along the way and they purchased a new car. They went to Detroit and picked up the new car right at the factory. But more than that even, they were going around, this is a year or two after Master had left the body. And a lot of the centers were really struggling without the Master being in the body. So she went around and she was giving talks. She was a Yogacharya and she was a minister made by Master. She had a unique position. And so she went to these different centers, she gave talks, she did personal interviews. And she was really working to help these centers out and to keep people's minds focused on God and Guru. And as they are traveling down the East Coast, she was lifted up for 11 days. She went into a state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Now, Nirvikalpa Samadhi is a very high state of samadhi, and you can open your eyes, you can operate into the world, and yet retain this union. And in this state, as they are driving down the freeway, God was showing her tremendous things. From the very origins of the earth, she was seeing how this earth came into being. She saw herself in the first incarnation. It is said that we go through all the levels of existence, incarnating first in the mineral, and then in the vegetable, and then in the animal, and finally the human, because the human is equipped with a spine and the brain that is capable of fully expressing God realization, and is unique on this earth in that manner. And so she was going through these experiences and she saw herself in the first incarnation as a dewdrop hanging from the leaf of a tree. And so these tremendous experiences are coming. She's seeing how the earth formed itself. And so sometimes during these experiences, she was telling her husband about the experiences that she was having. Now it's an interesting thing when you go through these experiences because you have counterbalancing forces in your life. If you have somebody you're close to, they may very well become very anchored in the earth. They feel that they have to be the anchor, and because you're flying so high, you might just fly right out of the earth sphere. So consciously or unconsciously, they try to root you, they try to anchor you. And so she's telling her husband about these tremendous experiences, and he says, "My God, can't you just open your eyes and look out and enjoy the scenery? We paid so much money for this trip, and all you're doing is talking about these visions." And he was that counterbalancing force in her life. But it was tremendous, and for 11 days she stayed in this. And they drove by and they saw these two children when they were stopped, and these two children were walking by the car, and when they looked at Mother, they just were riveted to her. And she was in this tremendous uplifted state. And God told her, because they had seen her while she was in this condition, in this state, they would be forever blessed and forever changed. So these are tremendous things. Tremendous things. And it transformed her. It transformed her body, mind, and soul. You don't realize how physical, how visceral these spiritual experiences can become. I remember there was a time as this kundalini force was coming up through my spine, and it was making me swing as I sat meditation, my torso, it was go and rotate one direction and then in another direction. And in the Bible it says that you will be moved so many cubits to the left and so many cubits to the right. And it's describing this spiritual movement that goes on in the body. And the purpose is that as your body adjusts itself, it adjusts itself to this higher frequency of energy that's coming through you. And it has to. One time Ramakrishna was asked why his body went through such difficulty and suffering as he was realizing God. And he says, well, it's like this. If you have a small hut, but inside the small hut is a big elephant, and all the elephant has to do is move a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right, and it threatens to collapse the entire hut. And he says, this is the way the body is. And God is in it, and it can be terrifying to people, but it need not be. Because this is a tremendously intelligent force, and it does exactly what is needed. But sometimes you feel as stretched as far as you think you can go. And as I was rotating in this way through the torso, and on many, many occasions, one time I was sitting in and I was rotating in this way, and my inner vision was directed to the very center of my head, and I looked straight down the spine, if you can believe such a thing. And as I looked straight down the spine, I looked down on the top of this hooded serpent of a cobra that was rotating exactly in the same manner as my spine was. And it was rising up through the spine as I was rotating in one direction and then in another direction. And then my spine would stop and then my head would rotate in this direction and that direction. Sometimes I was put into yogic postures that I didn't know that I could ever do. One time I was put down by this tremendous force. It was very, very powerful. I was put down onto the ground, and I was put down in the form of a cross. And as this power ran through me, I was up on my tiptoes, and I was on my fingertips, arched with my back to the floor, but completely off the floor. There's no way I could have ever done this in a physical way, but this power was so tremendous at the time. And then it reinforced upon my mind what Mother had always taught, that this body is the cross. That in the Bible it says the cross bled and the cross suffered. Now a wooden cross does not bleed nor does it suffer. When you stand upright with your feet together and your arms outstretched, you are in the form of the cross. And the cross is formed by the spine, and as this kundalini force comes up through your spine, that is the vertical. And when it comes to the heart center, that is where the first mystical crucifixion takes place inside of you. And that is the heart center. And when your arms are outstretched, that's the horizontal plane. That's the material plane, you see. And that is where the crucifixion happens within your own self, within your own body. And you feel as if you are nailed to the body. So everything that is described in the scriptures is symbolic for what you go through, what every person goes through. It's a blueprint, you see. It's not just what one individual went through 2,000 years ago. It's what every human being goes through in their ascent from the human to the divine. And you go through so many experiences there, and you go through the opening of the heart. And that can be tremendously painful. It's like an old, rusty door that's not been opened for years and years and years. In order to get that rusty door, you really have to work at it. You have to put lubricant, the lubricant of love, in it. You have to pry on it. You really have to work to get it open. Once it gets open, and it gets used to opening, then it becomes easy to open it. But that first is painful. And so another imagery for it is it's like a seed. And it's a shell, and the shell has to be cracked open, and it feels very much like that. It's very painful. And as this power, as this force comes through your heart center, you feel this is constricting force. And inside there's this expansive force, and it produces tremendous pain, tremendous tension. And when I was in the middle of it, I just told God, I don't think I can do this anymore. This is so painful. And then one night it finally happened, and when it did, that shell opened up, it cracked open. And what poured forth was such tremendous divine love, I can't describe it to you. It's not emotionalism. It is a state of consciousness. It is something that happens through you. And it's so powerful, it's so tremendous, it's so transformative, that it changes you never to be the same. Now, there are sometimes people have brief glimpses of that, and then it's as if the shell just clams back up again, and it's closed. And so you have to go back to it again and again, and some people become afraid because it was painful, and they don't want to have to go through that again. And you can stop the process if you become so determined that that's not what you want to do. You can divert the mind. You can get tempted. And now all your energies go back out to the world, and you lose what you had. But you know, when the time comes and you want to have that experience again, it doesn't come so easily. And you learn to guard it. You learn to have it as your most precious thing that you have in your life. There are times when spiritual experiences can come to us and we like it, but then we're drawn away from it. We don't value it, not enough, not nearly enough. We haven't learned to treasure it. Because any time you are in an uplifted state and then you come back down into this body, you are doing so through your own power of attachment and attraction. You've not yet learned to value God and Guru within enough in order to keep yourself in that transcendent state. But this is the path, you see. It's up and down, and every time we go down into a valley, it tests us, it's suffering, it's difficult, and then we have to work to climb back up out of that valley. And finally, we come to the time when we say, I don't want to go down into that valley. We may say that, but you don't really mean it yet, because we keep doing it. But finally we come to that point of purity, where we are now established in that divine consciousness. And that is with us all the time now. There is no up and down. There is no in and out. You are completely and totally secure and safe in that divine consciousness. Now just think, contemplate, meditate upon that state of consciousness. What would that be like? What would that freedom, what would that bliss, what would that light, what would that upliftment feel like? And let your mind dwell upon that. And breathe it in. And breathe it through. And feel the purity of that consciousness. Feel the freedom that you experience there. You see, this is part of your design. We are designed to operate as divine beings. And as we have insulated ourselves from the divine and we are only human beings. We rebel at it. We look for a solution. We're unhappy. We have an inconsolable grief. And to one degree or another, everybody has this who lives in separation from God. And they look in every direction, in every place except to God, in order to heal that. Everybody has their theory of what will produce lasting happiness. And so they get involved in hobbies. They have their passions. They go from one thing to another, always thinking, maybe this will be the thing that will really bring me lasting happiness. And it can bring them a little bit of happiness or a lot of happiness for a little bit of time or a long time. But eventually and always, that happiness begins to wear off. Why? Because only divine union can solve the dilemma. That is the fail-safe. That's what will always bring us back home. Now the question isn't whether we will return back to God consciousness from which we have evolved. The question is, how long will that take? God and His Supreme Self is completely content and happy. And if we as children want to run out into this universe and live in a state of separation, who is He to say anything different? But when we turn our attention towards Him and we begin to aspire for Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, and want that more than anything else, the supreme state consciousness that is beyond Mother and Father. You see, we use these terms, but when we say Him or we say Heavenly Father or Divine Mother, it's not meant to reduce God. It's just simply a way of relating to God. The Buddha, in gaining his realization, didn't like the idea of images being used around God at all. He wanted people to go straight to the goal, straight to the beginningless, endless, formless aspect of God. But you see, the mind wants something to get attached to hang on to. And so that's where the Ishta, the form of God, forms. Now, Siddhartha Gautama, who became the Buddha, would probably be truly in horror at all the Buddha images that are produced all over the world. There's probably more Buddha images than any other image of a saint or a divine being ever in this world. You find them in so many gardens and so forth. And he was absolutely against this. And you just see that the mind has this desire, has this way, it needs a way of relating. It can't relate immediately to the highest form of God. In India, this is Brahma. Brahma. And you know, there are only two temples in all of India to Brahma. Because there is no image there. It is beyond the beyond. And that cannot be described. It cannot be depicted by any particular picture. That is where in Islam, no form of God. And yet we see these beautiful mosques, we see these different formulas and different way of prayer that everybody, we see the Hajj and going to Mecca and walking around the rock. People have something to focus their mind upon. Until the mind becomes completely still. That's what a mantra is. A mantra is a sound, a syllable, a word of God to keep your mind upon until you transcend that and you go beyond the beyond. But you can't begin at the ending, you see. So we take these forms, we take these images, and they are tremendous. They're tremendous. Now I wanted to read to you a little bit from Paramahansa Yogananda's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. And this is chapter 17, stanza 20. And the translation reads, "The good or sattvic gift is one made for the sake of righteousness only, without expectation of anything in return, and bestowed in proper time and place to a deserving purpose." So again, the gift is the good or sattvic gift. Sattvic is pure, it's calm, it's closely aligned to God. It's made for the sake of righteousness only. And so Master's commentary below, a gift, what in India is called dana, D-A-N-A. That is presented to a worthy person without thought of receiving it for any kind of compensation is sattvic or virtuous in nature. The man who gives with, quote, no strings attached to a deserving person is pure-hearted. Paradoxically, such gift brings the donor the greatest spiritual benefit precisely because he does not seek it. The habit of giving gradually breaks down the walls of separation from God and man and leads the devotee to offer the Lord the ultimate gift, the surrender of his soul. Isn't that beautiful? The habit of giving gradually breaks down the walls of separation between God and man and leads the devotee to offer the Lord the ultimate gift, the surrender of his soul. And so when we think about giving, I was talking to a man the other day that I was contracting to do some services for us. And we were thinking about the price and talking about the price, and he's saying what he was charging and so forth. And so we made an agreement. And I thought about, and I thought about in the past, one of the great things for somebody who starts a business and then hires people to do that business is that down through time, he's paying salaries to these individuals, and what a wonderful feeling it is when you can give salaries to somebody who helps them to feed their family, to build a new home, to buy cars, to have good things for their children, education, all the rest of it. And that any time that there is a transference of money, which is life energy, really, it's a symbol for life energy, for prana. And you think about the transference of that, and how do you give? How do you give? And when you give with the idea that this is God giving to God, God giving to God, and you do it in a proper way, the person is somebody who is really you feel guided to give to them. They're a worthy recipient because God has directed you to do this in such a way. And when you give, you don't give with scarcity in mind. You don't give with resentment. You don't give unconsciously. So many times people just kind of shove money at somebody else. But when you think of putting the money in your right hand, handing it to that individual and feeling the vibration that goes out with that. The vibration of gratitude, the vibration of God giving to God. Feeling of gratitude that I have this money to give. Knowing that as that goes to a worthy person, that person, it enables that person to be able to perhaps support their family or support their business. It goes towards something that's good. You see how it changes your consciousness. It changes your mind. And it takes something that is oftentimes associated with evil and bad and greed, which is money, and it transforms it into something new. It lifts it up into something that is higher. And you do that through your consciousness, you see. And when you receive with the feeling of gratitude. Anytime anybody gives monies for this work, I take it and I take it to the altar and I put it up underneath Master's picture. And I surrender it to him in gratitude. I leave it there for at least a day. And the thought that I have when I do that is I give it to him completely. And if at the end of the day, the next day, it's somehow disappeared and gone, then Master had other uses for it. And it was his money in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end, and off it goes. But it's something that is given freely, you see, and asking for blessings on those who have given. that they might receive not only monetarily, but that they might receive spiritually, inspiration, positive creative thoughts, everything. That the abundance of supply, we oftentimes think of our supply as coming from the world, and there's much to reinforce that. But when we feel that God is supplying us from behind, first of all, our life energy, our ability to think, our ability to move this body, our ability to speak, all comes flowing from behind us. Now the material mind thinks, well, it comes through food, so I have to have food. But the yogi knows that life energy comes directly through the medulla, down through the spine, and is distributed out through the body. And so we are receivers. And when we receive with gratitude, you see, there can be no mundane day. There can be no mundane activity when we're feeling this life energy flowing from behind us and through us and out to the world from us. It transforms you. It lifts your consciousness. And it makes each and every moment something wonderful in God. And again, can you imagine that for yourself? Can you meditate on yourself, on that? Can you know within yourself where that is true? And allow that to begin to come forward. That's how you live. You don't waste your time on negativity. You don't waste your time on anything other than the feeling of this flow of God. In the Bible, it talks about the living waters. Jesus talks about the living waters. These are the living waters that are flowing into the spine and out from your being. And it washes you clean. It is a real baptism. It's something to be dipped into the waters, and it can be a wonderful experience to get that kind of baptism. I know that because I had that in the Ganges, being up near Rishikesh at a wonderful ashram there, Pukchati, which is a place of flowers. They had hundreds and hundreds of roses planted there. It's beautiful, right next to the Ganges. It's a small ashram there. Went down to the River Ganges, and I'd heard about taking a dip in there. It was supposed to be particularly purifying. I always thought about the inner baptism, but truly, taking a dip in there in that particular place was a tremendously purifying thing to do. But this life energy, you don't have to go to India. You don't have to go to the River Jordan. Right where you sit in your own meditation chair, you can open yourself up to these living waters. And as they rush through you, they will purify you. It's a wonderful thing. You know, it's something that some people have never had any experience with. The sense of purity that comes to you when you are touched by spirit. But it absolutely washes you clean. Washes you clean. And it's unmistakable when it happens. And it's tremendous. And when you're in constant contact, you see, with these living waters and they're flowing through you. Jesus was walking through the crowd. He was known as a healer. So there were so many people who came who had different maladies. So people are reaching out and they're touching him and calling him master. And each one is hoping for grace. Suddenly Jesus stopped and he looks around and he says, "Who touched me?" And the disciples said, "Master, what do you mean? Who touched you? There's so many people here. They're all reaching out to touch you." He says, "No, no. I felt virtue go out from me. Who touched me?" And they looked around and they found one lowly person who had reached out and touched and had a complete healing in that moment. Isn't that a marvel? I felt virtue go out from me. And as the Christ said, "I of myself do nothing, it is my Father who doeth the works." And yet he's conscious of when this divine energy flowed through him in a particular way. And this can be true for you as well. That whomever you meet, wherever you are, you can be in contact with this divine energy. And there'll be certain circumstances, and it's a bit mysterious at times, but you'll feel it. And this Virtue will go out from you. God uses his form in this way in many, many ways. And there are days when the life energy is completely just sucked right out of this body. Now there's enough life energy to run the heart and the breath and to be able to make some minimal movements, but that's about it. And there are complete days upon days that can be like that. But what is happening is that the energy, the life energy, these living waters are flowing in such a tremendously powerful way. And the full-time dedication is opening to these waters and having them flow through. And in the mind goes out to many different people and situations in this world. And I know for a fact, and I can say, as Jesus said, I do nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. I'm merely an observer in all of this. But this tremendous life force is going out and it is touching the lives of people and situations, places. And it's a tremendous thing. It's a tremendous thing. Once when I was up in the Himalayas near Babaji's cave and I was passing the night in the ashram there, and as we've had a very full moon, a very powerful full moon in recent days, that was a night for a full moon. And I went up onto the flat roof of this ashram building. And the moon was rising right up over Dronagiri. It has a sweet, wonderful Hanuman temple right at the top. And there's a small lamp that was burning up there that I could see at a distance. Then there's this huge light that was coming up over the hill that was the moon, the full moon. And there was a planet on each side of the moon. It looked like two small eyes with huge ajna in the center as they are arching up over the sky. And there was a tremendous feeling about that night. And as I sat meditating, at one point I got up and it was in the early morning hours. And I felt this tremendous spiritual, it was like a spiritual wind, but there was no wind. But that force felt like a wind that was coming down through the valley. I was standing up on the crest of this valley. And it would flow down that valley and it would go out into the world. And I knew for a fact that this was coming from some tremendous spiritual luminaries who were meditating up in those caves, up in those hills. And they were sending out blessings, or blessings were being sent out through them. Now, we are all meant to be helpers, co-creators with God. You are meant to be that, you see. That's not just for someone else. And to whatever God, to whatever degree God gives you the ability, it may be by giving someone a smile when they're having a difficult time. It may be by being in some small place of service. It may be by having some kind words for somebody. It can be expressed in so many different ways, but you are here to express that divine consciousness. And you, when you do it with this sense of dana, with a sense of selfless giving, you don't expect anything in return. You don't expect any great statues to be built for you or for there to be anything in particular recognition, but you have joy in the giving. That is your reward. It's built right into the very act of giving. You feel God flowing through you. And this is the most tremendous reward that you can have, if you like to call it that, but you have no expectation on the outer sense. Even that the person that you're giving to will even know that it is you who's giving. That's not the point of it, you see. You come into that state of complete surrender, and when you do, life force, life energy, love, divine light, wisdom, they automatically pour forth from you. And you become a blessing on this earth. Let us say you meet somebody with what we shall say an unlovely personality. And you just walk away grumbling, oh, that person's so terrible and they did this and they did that to me. And you just keep it up. You don't let go of it. You're attached to it. Are you a blessing to yourself or to anybody else? You're adding to that person's burden. But when you see beyond the personality, this doesn't mean you're a doormat in life. Doesn't mean you let people run over you left, right, and center. But when you see the higher nature in that individual, when you see God in potentiality within their heart, and you draw upon that, you desire that for them, you see that for them, then that goes out from you, and it helps to awaken the God nature within them. It strengthens it within them. God has placed you in that particular place at that particular moment for that purpose. And you see how you betray that purpose if only you think of the negativity of what that person did to you. You're no longer a blessing. You're no longer a conduit for divine consciousness. So as Jesus said, you pray for those people who hate you. You pray for them. You see the best in them. You want for their upliftment and their transformation. And in this way, we transform this world. There are people who look for some overarching figure to come into this world and kick a little butt, take some names, and whip this world into shape. And that's not the way that it happens. You see, even when a great avatar like Jesus comes in, or Krishna, or Rama, they come and they go. Is the world completely changed? No. It is uplifted. It is transformed to some degree. And certainly close disciples of theirs are transformed. But the world itself oftentimes continues on. This world is a product of the sum total of all the individuals within this world. And you are one of those individuals. And when you change your life, you will be, as Jesus said, and if I be lifted up, will lift up all the world with me. There is truth in that. And there are those who look for Jesus to come back and make that transformation in this world. But it defers the responsibility that each one of us have to change our lives, to transform our lives, to become conduits for the divine. And when you do that, you help to uplift this world, to change it. If there is a new age to come in, you are the forerunners of that new age. And the more you dedicate yourself to that, the more you focus upon it, the greater you help this world. So this is our purpose, to give without expectation of result, to give with a sattvic flow, with a calm, beautiful feeling. As Mother Teresa of Calcutta said, do something beautiful for God. Isn't that lovely? Do something beautiful for God. And the great thing is you will experience such peace, such joy, such light, such bliss, that you will look for nothing from this world. If the world responds, if others respond with joy and upliftment, it only adds to your joy. But you don't need anything from this world in that sense, because you have it already. Because God is with you. I'd like to close by reading from one of my favorite authors, Kabir. It is thought by many of the disciples of Lari Mahasya that he was Kabir come again, that he was a reincarnation of Kabir. A great saint of both East and West, he wanted initiation from a Hindu yogi, and he himself was Muslim. And he didn't think that the Hindu yogi would initiate him. So he knew that the yogi, every morning, he would walk down the steps towards the Ganges. And he knew exactly where he would walk each morning. And so one morning, it was very still dark at that time of day when he would go down to the Ganges. So his guru was coming down, who was to be his guru. He'd chosen to be his guru. And he was chanting Ram, Ram, Ram. He was chanting God coming down. And he placed himself on one of those steps so that he was laying down on the steps, but it was dark so his guru didn't see him. And his guru took a step and stepped on him with his foot. And he was chanting Ram. And, what is this? You're laying there? Yes, yes, you've initiated me now. Ram, 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 Ram. And so he went to repeat Ram, Ram and became a tremendous enlightened being and wrote this wonderful poetry. And this is one of them. Open your eyes of love and see him who pervades this world. I consider it well and know that it is your own country. When you meet the true guru, he will awaken your heart. He will tell you the secret of love and attachment. And then you will know indeed that he transcends this universe. This world is the city of truth. Its maze of paths enchants the heart. We can reach the goal without crossing the road, such is the sport of unending. Where the ring of manifold joys ever dances about him, there is the sport of eternal bliss. When we know this, then all our receiving and renouncing is over. Thenceforth, the heat of having never scorch us more. He is the ultimate rest, unbounded. He has spread his form of love throughout all the world. From that ray which is truth, streams of new forms are perpetually springing, and he pervades those forms. All the gardens and groves and bowers are abounding with blossoms, and the air breaks forth into ripples of joy. And the air breaks forth into ripples of joy. There the swan plays a wonderful game. There the unstruck music eddies around the infinite one. There in the midst the throne of the unheld is shining, whereon the great being sits. Millions of suns are shamed by the radiance of a single hair of his body. On the harp of the road, but true melodies are being sounded, and its notes pierce the heart. There the eternal fountain is playing its endless life streams of birth and death. They call him emptiness, who is the truth of truths, in whom all truths are stored. There within him creation goes forward, which is beyond all philosophy, for philosophy cannot attain to him. There is an endless world, O my brother, and there is the nameless being of whom naught can be said. Only he knows it who has reached that region. It is other than all that is heard and said. No form, no body, no length, no breadth is seen there. How can I tell you that which it is? He comes to the path of the infinite, on whom the grace of the Lord descends. He is freed from births and deaths who attain to him. Kabir says, it cannot be told by the words of the mouth. It cannot be written on paper. It is like a dumb person who tastes a sweet thing. How shall it be explained? And this is where God experience is an absolute must. Be on guard of one thing. Whatever you attain in realization, unless it is that infinite, unbounded spirit, if it has any limits to it, if it is not the unconditional, then you have not reached the ultimate goal. If it is not a continuous unfolding and bubbling up and expansionness within you, then you have not reached the goal. Do not rest until you have attained the goal of goals. You have come for that purpose. You would not be here listening to this if that were not true. Awake, arise, and become what you truly are. Please pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
Feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my being.
Surging in every cell of my being.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my
Father
are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Bliss.